Many of you recognize our guest, Juliette Huddy.
Juliette Huddy.
Juliette Huddy.
She's a well-known national television news anchor and personality.
I'm Juliette Huddy. You may know me from television. Professionally, I always felt a little restrained. The thing is, I'm anything but conservative, as you would expect someone who works at Fox News to be. I've been married a few times. My husband's a rocker. We don't have kids. All the money that we save on not having kids, we spend on travel, and I've met so many incredible people along the way. They're provocative, controversial, brilliant, and you'll meet them all. Get ready to experience things you've never experienced, never expected either, on Juliet Unexpected. I met my next guest at a rock club called Dingbats. It's been around forever. It's actually in this nice little town of Clifton, New Jersey, not very far from New York City. But if you drive down the street, you really would never suspect that there is a pretty solid and, you know, well-known rock venue snuggled in there between all the little town stores and the restaurants. But there it is. It's not, you know, the Paramount Theater or the Beacon or whatever. This is not a sleek venue. I mean, it's down and dirty. It is exactly what a rock club that brings in up-and-coming bands should be. And I love the owner, Freddie. So anyway, if you ever go there, tell him Juliette sent you. But anyway, my husband was playing in a band started by his old bandmate from Stereo Mud, Joey Zampella. They were in the band Stereo Mud together. Joey Z, as people know him. But they had started another band, and they were playing. They were headlining. So before their set, we were watching, of course, some of the other bands that were playing before them. And one band definitely stuck out, immediately stuck out. Like, I just thought, damn, these guys need to be big. So I went over, and, you know, probably, I think I probably had a few drinks. So I was chatting with their front man, Dylan. And we did the whole Facebook friendship thing afterwards. And that was that. And I've stayed in touch with the guys ever since. And I've actually interviewed them a few times, and they are so not what you would expect. Their story is really interesting. So here's my chat with Dylan Godino from the very impressive metal band Robots and Monsters.
What are the rules here?
You can curse. You can say, I mean, just whatever.
I mean, not that I'm going to go nuts. But.
No, I usually do.
Okay.
It's almost like, you know, that you can't typically do it on regular terrestrial radio. So
no.
This is fantastic. It's like a wonderful little addition. Tell me a little bit about the genesis of you yourself becoming a musician. I mean, you know, we all have our little things. My mom was a singer, so I wanted to be a singer when I was a little kid.
Right.
You know, I didn't have a good voice, so that kind of was like blown up. But how did it happen for you? When did you get into the music thing?
So, I mean, my parents always listened. I mean, music was always part of their lives.
Every kid, it seems like, who has turned out to be a musician, it's always got to do with the parents.
Yeah, I mean, they never played an instrument, but my dad and my mom are fairly close in age. I think they're like 3 years apart.
You don't know this?
My dad just turned 73, and I think my mom is 70.
Okay,
I don't know. But my mom was very much a kid of the 60s. Like, she loved the Doors and Led Zeppelin and all that. And my dad, even though he was only 3 years older, loved like doo-wop and like 50s music.
Oh,
and
wow!
And my mom hated it, just hated it. So, you know, driving in the car, it was always like a battle. Like, he would have CBS FM on, you know, with Cousin Brucey, and you know, my mom would have like her CDs, you know, her kind of like 60s rock band CDs. And, you know, she always was just very passionate about it. She, when she was really young, she would write lyrics. She didn't know how to play an instrument or anything like that. So she would write a lot of lyrics, you know, just these kind of like lovesick, you know, kind of lyrics. And she, you know, old school, like, wrote letters and sent them to record labels. And I forgot the name of the label. I believe it was in Philadelphia. She got, you know, there was interest. Like, she got letters back, and they were like, "This is great. We have a songwriter for you. We can do this." And her parents wouldn't let her go.
Oh, God. How old was she?
I mean, I'm thinking like less than 15.
Oh, wow.
There's definitely some, I mentioned Carole King the other day, and she nearly had a fucking fit. She's like, "I hate Carole King." I'm like, "How could you hate Carole King?" Because she's like, "That chick, that could have been me."
Oh, well, they're contemporaries, like, right. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, So, I mean, so it was always in her. My parents always, you know, listen to music. And then as we got older and started listening to my brother is in the band, he's like 18 months older than me. You know, we started listening to, you know, hard rock, heavy mm-hmm. metal, and she liked a lot of it. She mm-hmm. liked Metallica. She loved the first Guns N' Roses album. She loved. I remember going to the store and like buying, I think she bought a copy and I bought a copy, 1987 or whatever.
Because of course you each had to have your own copy, because yes. God forbid the child has, you know,
that's right.
Mom and dad. Ugh.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, it was always a part of it. And then she, you know, eventually when we got a little older, she wanted to give us piano lessons. And, you know, when you're young, you don't appreciate mm-hmm. piano. You don't want to play piano. So she forced my, you know, my brother's older, so he got the brunt of that. So she forced him into piano lessons. I don't know how long it lasted, but he didn't like it. So I never had to take piano lessons. Of course, in hindsight, now at age 41,
yes.
I would fucking love
yeah.
to be able to play piano.
Yeah. How many? I feel like everybody that's going to be listening to this probably was forced to take piano lessons or, you know, whatever. I mean, something that now they look back on, they're just like, my God, if we only. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
piano was the same thing for me.
But at the age of like, you know, 10, 11, 12, you don't know. And now I'm trying to. We have a piano in our house.
Mm-hmm.
It basically came with the house. Nobody can play it. And we're trying to get our kids to learn how to play it. And of course, you know, they're rolling their eyes. They don't want to take piano lessons. So.
And they need to hear this podcast.
Yes, they do. But then we started, my brother started taking guitar lessons. I started taking drum lessons. And, you know, we began playing together and with another friend of ours, Billy Bergman, who's mm-hmm. The bassist in Robots and Monsters. I mean, we, the three of us have been playing together since, since I was 11.
Did you play, like, in high school, did you have a band and you played for, you know, little parties and stuff like that?
We never played parties. I don't think any of us were popular enough to do that.
That's how you become popular.
I don't
Come
know.
Come on, not, Dylan.
Not,
get with it.
Not the kids, no. The kids that we grew up with had absolutely no interest or, you know, healthy respect for kids who played instruments.
Where did you grow up?
In Bergen County.
Wealthy kids?
No, it's a very, we grew up in a very middle class town. They just weren't, I don't know. They just weren't interested. They just weren't interested. Or maybe that's me, you know, remembering wrong or just
13-year-old self.
Yeah, I mean, which is not even that different than my 41-year-old self, as it turns out. But I mean, the first time we ever played a show was at Studio One in Newark. I was in eighth grade, and I think my brother and everybody else were sophomores in high school.
Oh, wow.
So we opened for Trickster.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
At one point. You know, it was one of those shows with like, you know, three locals on.
Yeah, but was the band Robots and Monsters back then?
No, God, no. This is, at the time, the band was called Ambush, which is just an awful name. But, you know, we were kids. And, yeah, I mean, it was like thrash metal. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
So how did you, okay, so you get, you're booked on this, I mean, Trickster, it's nothing to sneeze at.
It was great. It was still one of the best experiences of my life.
How were they to you?
They were super nice. They were, from what I remember, I forgot who it was, but my brother had this Gibson Explorer guitar that he used, and one of the guy, I guess it was the guitarist, came up to him and was like, oh, that's really, because I think he played a Gibson Explorer as well. You know, I remember him coming up to mm-hmm. Derek, my brother, and saying, oh, it's a really cool guitar. And yeah, I mean, as far as I remember, they were really nice. They weren't like, who the hell are these, like,
these
like,
little punks,
13-year-olds, like, on stage. God,
that is pretty incredible, though, I have to say. But yeah, you know, it just seems like when you, for kids who started off so young and so early, you're the ones who would become the successes, and you're the ones who would be talented. And you guys, you know, you guys have been together for how many years now at this point?
We formed, me, Billy, and Derek formed Robots and Monsters, I think, in 20. 2013. And so, I mean, it was just the three of us. We had, after like we were in college and stuff, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to play music together, the three of us.
Were you guys all still in the same area?
My brother went to Cornell, so he was upstate. I was at home for 2 years because I was still in high school. Mm-hmm. Then I went to small school in Pennsylvania called Elizabethtown College. That was like 3.5 hours away. Billy was still local. So Billy was there, but like me and Derek were not.
Right. So you just weren't geographically. It wasn't going to, you know, wasn't going to gel.
Right. And then every summer we would get together and quickly write very silly, like punky thrash songs under the band name The Llama Project.
The Llama Project.
Yes.
It's so funny that you say that. This is totally an aside, but my brother, who's the weirdest person maybe on the planet, he would sit in class. He's 6 years younger than me. He would sit in class out in California, and just to crack all the kids up and to piss off the teacher, he would just sit there and they'd be taking tests or whatever, and then he'd just start like ducking and like look at him, and he'd be like, "What?" And the teacher would be like, "What's wrong?" And he'd say, "The llamas are coming," you know. And it was just so that's always been a joke. Llama is like, I call him my little llama. See, there's like this whole thick kinship with us.
Yeah, it's meant to be. Maybe he would love the llama project.
He probably would. He's a great drummer. Anyway, all right. So under the pseudonym The Llama Project.
Yeah. So we would get together and write these, you know, these ridiculous songs, you know, with nonsense lyrics. And we would go to there was a local studio in Saddlebrook, New Jersey, that was, you know, fairly cheap. We'd save up some money. We'd go in there and, you know, crank out like 13 songs with like, you know, a very, you know, we wouldn't really mix it down. They were never mastered, but we were just happy that we, you know, recorded something that didn't sound like a shitty basement tape. So, you know, a few years ago, I guess in 2013, we were all sort of talking and we were all a little depressed that, you know, music had really, for the most part, vanished from our lives, you know, because we all, you know, we all have jobs, we all have, and, you know, careers, not just jobs.
Right.
We all had careers, we all had kids, and, you know, it was rough. So we all, so Billy, myself, and Derek decided, you know, why don't we just get together and, you know, play some music? And so when we got together, it was just, we were going to, like, maybe, like, write some Llama Project songs and maybe record them really cheap.
Llama Project, I love it. It's amazing, but actually.
It was always a source of a lot of fun for us. But when we got together and we started writing, the music was not as like goofy, and it organically we just started writing. It turns out, I guess, we wanted to write more serious songs.
So you guys never had the intention, I guess, in high school of being like, okay, we're not going to go to college, we're just going to pursue the band thing. That's which I find very interesting, because, you know, you are a very good band, and I easily could see you guys being superstars. But that really was never your intention. It was almost like maybe if you got lucky, then you would consider it. But
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my parents were very pragmatic. They were, I mean, we were the first generation of college kids. You know, my mom was a emergency room nurse. My dad was a mailman. And, you know, they just wanted to make sure that we would do better than them. Mm-hmm. And so, like, from day one, we knew we were going to college. And, you know, my brother was always, you know, pretty smart. And, you know, he went he got into an Ivy League school and, you know, became a veterinarian. And, you know, I went to college. I have an English degree. I'm in publishing.
Don't roll your eyes over there.
So, yeah, it was never, I don't know, I guess.
Did you have any regrets?
Not really, because I see now how difficult it is to be in a band. I mean, even bands like, as, you know, the guys from Mastodon, for example, are always talking about how impossible it is to have any sort of life balance and, you know, make enough money.
Yeah.
Because you have to, it's relentless touring. And that's, that's cool, but, you know, I don't think people realize how much of a grind that is.
I mean, yeah, I mean, all you have to do is date somebody or be doing it yourself or marry somebody, and you realize it is not a glamorous life. I mean, the touring life is not a glamorous life, and not only is it physically exhausting, but it's emotionally exhausting too, because it does take you away from your family, and unless you're, you know, whatever, Joey Belladonna, and you can bring your wife with you everywhere you go, or you've got the, you know, Lars and the rest of the crew with Metallica, and you've got your own jet. I mean, it's just really changed. This whole industry has really changed. And touring, I mean, yeah, you're making money, but you're also, you got to make money on merch. And otherwise, what are you making money on?
Yeah, it's mostly merch.
Like selling records. I mean, that's, you know, you don't do that anymore.
No, you don't sell records. And yeah, that's, you know, we have this ongoing band chat on Facebook Messenger, you know, the four of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just yesterday we were talking about Mastodon, and I basically said, like, yeah, you have to be Metallica in order to, like,
yeah,
have this, like, great life.
If your kids wanted to go into music, what would you say?
I would encourage them greatly to learn to get licensed in some sort of trade.
Yeah.
You know, I would love for them to, you know, it's so funny. I don't, like, we were raised very much like you go to college, you go to high school, you do really well in high school, you go to college, mm-hmm. you do really well in college, and then you get a great job. But I don't know if that's really the case anymore.
The world has changed quite a bit. I mean, if you haven't noticed, we've got a reality show guy.
I have noticed that a little bit.
We talk about that quite a bit here in this country. The world has definitely changed. I actually want to talk to you about that because, you know, you and I are friends on Facebook, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you've seen my. I used to not comment politically at all. I just thought, and I would be annoyed at my friends who did, because I was like, this is not what Facebook's for, you know. But I can't take it anymore. So I changed my career a bit. I've gone from television, at least when I was working local television, you know, really not the place to sit there and spout off your political views.
Nope.
Once I got into radio, I was like being encouraged by them to, you know, say outrageous and provocative things. I'm like, oh, this, okay, I'm probably not going to be back in television anytime. So why don't I? So it's interesting. So now I actually do post things on Facebook, and I'm, you know, I've lost like 20 people, some friends and stuff like that. But what's your thought about this? I mean, you're an English guy. You're, mm-hmm. I know that you're very thoughtful. You always kind of make little comments. We sort of make comments back and forth. I feel like politically maybe we're aligned, but if we weren't, it wouldn't matter. But
no, we're definitely aligned. I mean, you know, it's the sort of thing where there's so much to say that I get so overwhelmed with anger that there's been so many times where I've like started to make a comment on Facebook and was like, fuck this, like, I'm not going to change anybody's mind. But listen, I mean, I'm disgusted, I'm embarrassed, I can't even, whatever it's
are
all,
are you scared?
Yeah, I'm a little scared. I'm a little scared. I mean,
of what? Of who we are as a country, or who? You know, what's happening to our country?
I'm scared.
All of the above.
I'm scared about how so many people have been emboldened to show how much of an asshole they are.
Yes, I'm having whiplash right now because I'm nodding my head. Yes, that's exactly the same way I feel.
I mean, that's really frightening to me. I mean, you know, you think about, like, you know, you shouldn't suppress your personality. You know, you should say what's on your mind. But the thing is, when there's an adult in the room, you do suppress. There is a social contract. There's social contracts because we can't go around killing each other constantly. And, you know, whatever you think of Obama, like, you know, dad was there. Do you know what I mean? Like, when dad was in the house, it was like, you know, we have to act like civilized adults.
Mm-hmm.
Now you basically have a degenerate, you know, in the room. And so the people who have some sort of moral compass are upset and frustrated. And then the people who are kind of hiding in the corners, which normally would be a bad thing. You don't want to encourage anybody to hide who they are, or hide in the corners, or, you know, whatever. But that's where they should have been. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've seen.
And now they're not.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of scary things from friends of mine who I don't really feel like I'm friends with them anymore. I haven't had the breakup conversation where I go, I think you're a racist piece of shit.
Right.
But I mean, it's, to me, it's pretty obvious who they are as a person. And a lot of these people that I don't really know that well, but, you know, former colleagues, just acquaintances, and maybe a little bit more than that. But it really has come to the point where I'm just kind of sickened by it. And yeah. I'm also sickened, just like you said, by the fact that we've become, if I say, look, don't talk that way, then I'm called a snowflake. First of all, so if I want to be compassionate and sensitive about other people, then I'm a snowflake, and that's a bad thing.
Yes.
That's the problem. And it blows my mind when I look on Twitter and some of the people that write and say things to me, and I click on there. I try not to do this because I try not to let myself get to the point where it annoys me so bad that I really want to know who the hell this is writing these awful things to me.
I do that constantly.
But then I look and it's like, got to tell you, 5 times out of 10, it's, you see, it's the hashtag MAGA. Mm-hmm. And then it's the, Christian conservatives from South Carolina. I'm like, where'd the whole non-judgmental thing go? What happened?
Yeah. No, it's, it's true. It usually is. There's a lot of reductive language out there where, like you said, you express some compassion and then that means you're an asshole. And, I hate to say it, but, liberal-minded people seem more times than not. I'm not saying we're all perfect. There's plenty liberal assholes out there.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem that when there's like a Facebook fight between a liberal and a conservative who's a Trump supporter, it's one-sided. The Trump supporter is a fucking moron. And the liberal, at worst, maybe is just, slightly below average in intelligence.
I'm not going to talk about the intelligence factor, but I will say I had one of my best friend's mothers, who is a conservative, elderly woman, and my husband's brother, who is very liberal and very outspoken, comic book guy, he's really like, California. I mean, he is the anti-Trumper, times 10.
Right.
And the two of them, they don't know each other. And it was my instigation when I posted something about Trump, and they started to get into it. And it was like, they don't know who, neither one of them knows the other person, but all of a sudden it's, you uneducated piece of crap, you liberals, you snowtard or whatever. It was like, what the, and I'm saying that.
It's libtard. Julia.
I know, whatever it is. But Snowtard's actually kind of funny.
I like Snowtard.
I'm gonna point that one.
Can we use it both simultaneously on Facebook later?
Yes.
Snowtard.
Snowtard. But I'm sitting there. I read this morning as I'm on the train, at 3:38 freaking train in the morning, and I'm like looking at this and I'm just going, these are adults fucking acting like seventh graders. This is a 70-something-year-old woman. And I love my brother-in-law, but I mean, he was getting guttural too. And I'm just like, they're just literally attacking each other.
Because that's what happens. A tone is set. A lot of people say it doesn't matter who's in the White House. Politically speaking, that might be more true than we would like to believe. But it does matter. This is proof. We have degenerated. I'm guilty of it. Before the election, I was much more vocal. Right after the election, I was also very vocal. But it came to a point where I just started unfollowing and unfriending people. And I didn't make that stupid announcement everybody does where they fucking announce that they're unfriending. I just unfriended people, right? You're allowed to do that, guys. Because I was getting so, I'm in my head so often already that like I couldn't add another layer of nonsense.
Yeah. So what do you do to try to get yourself when you get all riled up? What do you do to calm down? Or can you calm down at this point?
I'm not good at coping, Juliet.
I don't think any of us are anymore at this point. I got to be honest with you. Send me some Zoloft and let me go to sleep.
Yeah, well, that's that's helped.
There you go. In your personal life, mm-hmm. You've mentioned that you have kids.
Yes.
A wife. Mm-hmm. And this is what is going to impede you from just quitting your job and running off to chase your dream of running around the world in a band.
Yeah,
pretty
that's,
much.
That's definitely yeah. That's definitely an impediment. I don't know how well I would do. Touring the country constantly.
Well, you have to have your compadres there with you, and none of them seem to be ready to drop everything either.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kevin would probably drop stuff. He's basically married, but not on paper.
Right.
He doesn't have kids, so he'd probably be, and he has a lot more experience. Touring, like he's, you know, Billy too has some good experience, you know, touring Europe, but Kevin has a lot of experience working with, you know, really well-known people as like guitar techs or, you know, he's played in bands that have, you know, toured all over Europe and stuff like that. So,
and I talked to you once before about this when we did the interview at Dingbat with the rest mm-hmm. of the band, but, you know, I said, is there anything that would ever make you consider touring the U.S., just doing like a little sort of injection of, you know, 2 weeks or something like that? Is that something that you would consider doing?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think something, you know, I think, you know, a two-week tour would be, I think that'd be great. You know, we would definitely have to work things out logistically. But, yeah, I mean, that, I mean, basically would have to happen is we would have to make sure that a booking agent was, you know, was working for us and doing the right thing.
Is that something that you are working on or you are doing? Or
I mean,
I see you guys are going to be doing something in December.
Yeah.
We could tell us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're playing.
That's cool.
We're playing in at Debonair Music Hall with Doyle, who's, you know, the guitarist from the Misfits. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've been writing and recording a lot, so we really haven't, you know, booked much of anything as of late.
When you say writing and recording, mm-hmm. so that you're working on a new album?
Yeah, we recorded, I mean, we're basically done. We recorded 5 songs. They're done. They're mixed. They're mastered.
Good.
So now,
when is this going to happen?
Well, that's a good question for Kevin and Billy. We've been having, sort of friendly fights about.
Well, I've got Kevin and Billy on the phone right now. Let's talk to them.
So me and my brother are basically like, the songs are done. Let's get them up on, you know, Spotify and, mm-hmm. and all the digital distribution places. Kevin and Billy would like to wait until we have, you know, a video done and like release a single, which is great. I would love to do that as well. But I mean, we've done 2 videos before and they've all come like a year after, you know, the songs were done. Or actually like a year after they've been released. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to make that happen. But, you know, again, with everybody's schedule. And, you know, it's hard to strike a balance between making a video that isn't corny and shitty mm-hmm. and making a video that's compelling with the limitations you mm-hmm. have. Time yeah. limitations.
Financial, you know, limitations.
Right. Luckily, Kevin is a professional video editor. So that helps a great deal. However, unless you just want another video with the band playing the song, you know, you have to think about, you know, concepts. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say you have 5 really cool concepts. Well, how many of those concepts can you realistically do without, you know, knowing, you know, a stable of like actors,
right?
And, you know, and then, you know, if you're going to do something extensive that, you know, includes somebody that needs to act a little bit, if that person is even slightly shitty, like it's the video is going to be awful. So like you're struggling between getting a cool video for cheap and a cool concept, and but is actually doable. So it's going to take a long time. So,
are you and your brother kind of, is it you guys are the one? Yeah. I got the vibe there that's what.
Me and Derek's trying to be diplomatic. Right. He'll send a message. Hey, how about we put those songs out? And then I'll be, you know, an asshole and like
good, you know, cop, bad cop.
I'll throw in a comment about the fact that, they'll say like, you know, what songs are we going to play at the next show? And I'll say like, well, we can't play the new ones because we don't have a video for them, which, you know, obviously is bullshit. Obviously we could play them. It's just that they don't want to release them. But, you know, and then Kevin gets, you know, angry with me and that's a good time.
Oh, it's the whole Misfit thing. Well, so you guys are gonna be playing with the Misfits. When can people, I'm not sure when this is going to air, when it's going to be posted. I mean, it will be in the next month, but, what can we look forward to, I guess, you know, through the fall and maybe early part of the winter?
You can look forward to the video, hopefully.
At some point. Maybe a couple songs here and there.
I mean, if Derek and I win the fight, you will release songs.
You need a tiebreaker. I mean, I think I'd be perfect. Maybe we should.
I mean, well,
you don't know where I lean right now, do you? I mean, you know, I could.
I mean, I have a sense.
Just for, real quickly, I just about personal stuff because I don't want to leave, you know, without people getting kind of to know a little bit more about
you,
English major and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like that. You always from the moment I met you, I remember the first time I met you. Mm-hmm. It's not like we've been hanging out for years, but you just struck me as a very cerebral guy and thoughtful guy. And it was funny because I talked to you, I was like, your voice is very, you know, you're soft-spoken. Mm-hmm. You're out there singing, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But how did you meet your wife? How long have you known each other?
Let's see. So I met my wife. My godmother has a daughter, and that daughter was really good friends with my wife. And at some point I was engaged, and that didn't work out.
Ugh, tramp.
And then
I'm kidding. I'm just not listening. Just a joke. Don't know you.
She will not be listening. I honestly don't even know where she is.
You haven't done the Facebook thing? Like,
so, no, I have. That's why I don't know where she is, right? Juliet. I've come up empty. No, yeah, out of curiosity. Yeah, I'm sure everybody does that.
Yeah, I always especially with the guys that were jerks, I'm like, I just hope they look like crap.
Right,
they all do.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess it was a few months after I broke up with my ex-fiance. So at some point, my godmother said something like, oh, Dylan should meet Jen. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And so basically, my godmother set us up.
Aww.
It was a blind date. I had never met her. And the first time we went out, I was in another band, and I just got done playing a show. And that's so, God, I don't even remember. Did I shower? Because at the time, I'm a drummer. I'm a vocalist for Robots and Monsters. But, you know, for years, I played drums for bands. So I was a sweaty mess. I don't even remember.
Oh, God, you must have been.
If I showered.
Maybe you should ask her. I mean, I'd like to hear her perspective of this whole thing. But did you fall in love with her right away? Does she have a name?
Jennifer.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I liked her pretty much right away.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, and it was never this like, holy shit, she's amazing, I'm going to marry her. It was a slow burn. And I think, and I always thought to myself, like, that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
You know, like,
why do you say that? That's funny that you say that, because I agree with you. I mean, you can't lay a blanket generalization on everybody, but why do you think that's a good thing?
Because I think it's scary and maybe a little, you know, you don't want your relationship to be superficial. So, and I think that was part of the problem with my ex-fiance is that, maybe I was interested too much in, you know, certain things and, you know, mm-hmm. physical things and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're all in, like, like immediately. Like,
yeah.
To me, that's like a red flag. Like, why are you all in immediately? Like, you don't know this person.
That's very true. I, as somebody who's been married and divorced a couple times, I can attest to that, that you have the you just don't know somebody right away. And you know, it takes a while. Even if you think that, oh my God, it's like we're soulmates, you really do have to get to know somebody, because I can tell you that, you know, it takes a while for me to really be who I am. I'm always on my best behavior, so everybody's always on their best behavior right. at first. So how long were you together then until you decided that you guys were going to move forward in a serious way?
It wasn't that long. I mean, I'm not
going to
know.
2 weeks, Juliet.
Jen will hear this and she'll be... Neither one of us are good with like times and dates. We forget our anniversary every year, like almost every year. I want to say maybe like 6 months, and she moved in. I had a condo in Hackensack that I had bought, and she was living in Lodi with her, a really good friend of hers, and they were going to move. Their lease was up or something, and one of them wanted to get out or something like that. And she was thinking like, oh, maybe I'll move to Hoboken. Maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll do
that.
The
infamous, the lease is up. Wait, now does she, because you've got the dreads and stuff like that. I mean, you're, you know, a rocker looking guy.
Yeah.
Is she very artsy looking? Is she creative-y looking?
No.
It's like,
no.
My husband, he's got the long hair and then he looks like the devil, or you know, met Charles Manson and had a baby, you know, and then there's me with my little blonde bob, you know.
No, yeah. I mean, she's, you know, she's got brown hair, she wears glasses. No, I mean, she's pretty conservative. I mean, not her. I mean, she's, you know, we're both very much the same.
Yes, I can.
Liberal minded.
I can't see you with somebody, you know, yeah. rah-rah Trump.
But she's not, you know, she's not like tatted up. I'm not tatted up.
Why not? That's,
I don't know. I'm thinking about it though.
You said that you're scared of a lot of things. Is this, the needle? Is that a problem?
No, I'm that's part of the reason I haven't gone ahead with it, because I think 90% of the reason I want a tattoo is because I want to feel that. I want to feel the needle.
Oh God. Ooh, that's interesting. There's some that I could take this in so many different directions, but I'm gonna restrain myself so I don't scare you.
You don't have to restrain yourself.
As we take a sip of our drink, final thing, because I don't want to keep you too long, and they're gonna be bugging me to get this studio. But what do you like to do in your spare time? We were talking about traveling. My husband and I are freaks about travel. Mm-hmm. We don't have kids, so that's where our money's going.
Damn right.
I mean, yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it's sad that we don't have kids, but it is great that we can, you know, really occupy our time by just, you know, jumping off whenever we want to.
That's awesome.
Are you a traveler? Do you like to do that kind of stuff? I would imagine, I guess, you're spending a lot of time on your music.
Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time on the music. You know, there's other things I do. I don't know if they want to call them side hustles or whatever, but yeah, I mean, there's other things I do. I mean, I'm not a big traveler. I do.
Why?
Because a lot of time, I guess, because most of the travel I've done alone for like, for years. I ran a website about the comedy industry, and, you know, I flew to comedy festivals. So a lot of it had to do with that, but I'm always alone, and I it's not good. It's not good when I'm alone,
because
I feel alone if there's 42 people in the room.
It's like,
so
my husband's the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah. He, you know, it's a type. It's a type.
Yeah.
Have you gone to Europe?
No.
Okay, Dylan.
My wife has, but
you and your we're taking you.
Okay.
Where you guys, you have to go to Europe. I'm telling you.
We would love to.
It opened. It was weird because most of my career was in television, and it was over at the devil,
mm-hmm.
which I loved working there when I was at Fox for most of the time, you know, up until 2000, whatever it was, 2007. But it was a different place back then, I felt. But I just was so focused on work, you know, that I didn't want to take vacations. And I hadn't been to Europe until 2009. And even then, I was there on a honeymoon with my husband, who my ex-husband who just, you know, didn't work out. We actually got divorced 4 months later, to tell you how that honeymoon went.
At least you're efficient. That's great.
That's true. Yeah, that was a quick one. Usually they're, you know, they usually go off after about a year, but this one was 4 months. But I didn't really enjoy my vacation, but I finally went back and it opened up a whole world to me. To me, I think travel is, and I know it's not easy for everybody to do, especially if obviously money is a concern.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
But I'm telling you, I could get you the best deal. Like, I know how to do this. My husband thinks I'm the travel, like, sensei. We travel the best, and it's always, like, really efficient financially. But, I just think it opens your eyes to other cultures. Even if it's just the European culture, you just see so much about people, and it's really changed my life in so many ways. And now that's all we want to do is just go back over there. Yeah. I mean, I knew if we had kids, I'd be taking them over there too.
Yeah. Jen has all these like grand plans. She wants to take the kids all over the place.
I'm telling you, I can get you like great flights and stuff like that, and then you just do the Airbnb thing. It's the best. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
All right. I'll hit you up for that.
Okay. Anything else you can tell me that's going on in the near future for you that's interesting that we may want to know about?
Man, that's a...
That's one of those questions I probably should have prepared you with.
I mean, as far as robots and monsters go...
As far as anything goes.
I'm really happy with the 5 new songs we did. When we did the first release, I was a little... It was the first time I was doing serious vocals for anything. So, you know,
really?
I was... Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Okay. That's interesting. I mean, you were a drummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. No. I mean, the first time I seriously did vocals was 2013.
That's not an easy... The vocals that you do, they're not easy vocals. I mean, the screaming is...
Yeah. I mean, it takes... A little bit of, I mean, that's nice that you appreciate that. I mean, most people would hear the screaming and they're like, yeah, he's just screaming.
No.
But there's a lot, you know, there's, you just have to get used to like pacing your breath and like singing from your diaphragm.
Do you warm up? I mean, do you know all the vocal warm ups?
No.
Like that? No?
No.
That's impressive, I have to tell you.
My warm up is when we go on stage and everybody's fiddling around with their instruments, getting everything plugged in properly, I'll turn around and just do a few like screams to make sure, like not on mic,
right?
to make sure I know how to scream still.
Wow.
And then that's it.
That's impressive, because I know a lot of these
idiotic.
Potentially you better watch those vocal cords, buddy. Yeah, I know, because there is definitely something that with exercising the vocal cords. So.
Yeah, I mean, I know screamers that warm up properly.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, I just don't want any part of it.
it seems like too much work.
For people who don't know your music, this is obviously kind of an important question. Mm-hmm. Can you just give them a little bit of an idea about what do you focus on in your songs? I mean, you're pretty intense. There's a lot of in your mind, you know, kind of lyrics. Explain a little bit of that. I mean, you mentioned you kind of glazed over it when I joked around about the Zoloft thing, but it seems like maybe there's something that has to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started writing lyrics, I was kind of timid, and then I feel like on the second thing we released, I got a little bit more brave, and I think this one, which is our third, is probably, you know, I think I'm getting to the point where I want to be a little bit more, you know, open about shit. So
is that when you say brave, that means open about your honesty?
Yeah, or trying not to write too vaguely about stuff. So yeah, I mean these 5 songs we did, I mean, it's all about like depression. And
is that something that you've experienced?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very real thing. And you know, it's,
I mean, look, obviously with what we've seen just in pop culture, you know, Anthony Bourdain, I mean, it's just, this year has been mind blowing. It's just one week after the next. So obviously it's nothing to laugh at. It just amazes me how some people still make those stupid comments like, well, that's just selfish. You know, it's like,
yeah,
clearly.
Yeah. I mean, nobody ever, you know, this is even cliche. You never know I mean, you never know what somebody's going through. I mean, mm-hmm. there's stupid fucking memes that say that, mm-hmm. but you just never know what people are going through. You never know if somebody, you know, you don't know what it takes for someone to walk down the street for two blocks or, you know, go to work every day. So, you know, not that you have to, like, you know, handle everybody with kids gloves, but, you know, it's something that I don't know what else to write about, because mm-hmm. that's what's, I mean, as much as I, you know, Donald Trump pisses me off, there's no political songs.
Oh, really?
No.
Why? No. Well, you go kind of know. Well, why? Why?
Because I don't. There's other bands that do a really good job at being political. If I did it, it would feel disingenuous, or that I was just trying to grab a certain segment of the population.
That surprises me, because you are political. I mean, you do have an opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, who knows what, you know, what inspires us and what we think is authentic.
Right.
Yeah. So what inspires you is what you go through emotionally, yeah. mentally.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just never inspired to write a song about how the government sucks and, you know, all this other stuff, which, you know, no disrespect to any of those bands, because like I said, a lot of them do a great, I mean, one of my favorite bands is Bad Religion. I mean, they do an amazing job at it, but I'm, you know, I'm not them.
You don't worry about, it's not a matter of avoiding it because you don't want to alienate an audience member.
I mean, that I think that's a good byproduct of me not wanting, mm-hmm. But yeah, like on stage, I'll never, I mean, people are going to hear this, so maybe we'll lose some people, but, you know, I will never go on like a political rant on stage. I'm more apt to, you know, talk about my feelings and like weep in a corner.
Oh, on stage. I go back and forth with that, though. I you know, part of me likes it when artists take a stand, and I can't stand it when people say, "What the hell do we care what some rock star thinks?" Well, because they're out there and they have a platform, and they know that a lot of people can listen to them. So
that's right.
I like that. But then, by the same token, I remember when I was, you know, going to U2, I think Zooropa, whatever it was, you know, in St. Louis, mm-hmm. and I went to go see their show, and I love, you know, and then Bono's out there ripping George, but and I was just like, oh man, you know, I'm like, come on, I just want to see,
right.
You know, it's sometimes I guess I pick and choose my battles sometimes with that, but.
I think that's, yeah, I think that's normal.
I guess it would just be nice to know that if you have an opinion about something, if you are political about something, mm-hmm. that somebody could be out there, some listener could be out there, and just respect your feelings and not think you're a piece of shit because, you know, you do like Donald Trump's policies,
right.
or I do think that, you know, Barack Obama was a solid president.
Yeah.
You know, you like to think that we can respect each other, but just
yeah. But I mean, I'm guilty of that too. If one of my favorite bands came out and they were like, "We think Donald Trump is doing a great thing," like I'd probably be done with that. not like for like some sort of like boycott like reason, but just because I couldn't, like, oh man, I thought we had something here. Now you're coming out of the closet as a total asshole.
Is there anybody that has done that to you? Is there anybody recently, any kind of bands or performers that you've just been like, oh God, forget it?
No, not that I know of. Every once in a while, I'll see somebody again on Facebook. Just, you know, maybe somebody in the local metal scene say something like totally ignorant. And I was like, oh man, like, I sort of liked you.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And, you know, it's, you know, that's something, you know, I need to work on and everybody needs to work on, like not discounting someone for having. But to me, it's just so much more than that.
Yeah.
We're not talking about, you know, whether you like, you know, the Jets or the Giants or the Mets or the Yankees. This is a fundamental, you know, this is someone's philosophy. You know, that matters.
Yes.
That tells you whether you're going to be friends with somebody or not friends with somebody. So.
Right. I think the thing that I'm always so interested in is with the friends who are Trump supporters is that they say, well, you know, we don't like the way he behaves, but we love his policies. And it's just, but the way he behaves, in my opinion, it is outrageous and scary.
Yeah.
And I think unhinged,
yeah.
frankly. So, yeah, it's hard for me to kind of reconcile that, but, anyway, on that note, I want to let you go, and I want to let the studio go because they just gave me the eye. But
the stink eye?
They gave me this. Will you come back, please, and you can bring your boys, and we can find out what we. Maybe we could just have like a little smackdown kind of thing here.
We can
see who comes out. Should we do the video first? Do we let the music, those five songs come out?
We could come back in a year and a half. The songs still won't be out.
Hey, don't say that.
No, they'll be out.
Don't say that. Well, hopefully we can time this so it'll come out right before the songs come out.
That would be nice.
Maybe we can do that. I'll stay in touch with you.
Yeah.
Well, Dylan, I look forward to ganging up on all the Trump supporters on Facebook with you. Just kidding, everybody. Yeah. Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you,
Pleasure
Juliet.
Seeing you.
Thanks.
The thing I love about Dylan is that he is unexpected. He is like that cerebral kind of rocker. You know, he's not out there picking up chicks. He's not out there getting wasted. Not that there's anything wrong with all that. I mean, I get it. We all like to go crazy once in a while, you know, at certain times in our life. But the thing about Dylan is that he's a serious guy. He's the perfect example of a guy that doesn't suffer fools, as they say. And it makes it easy to get along with him, given the fact that we're on the same page ideologically. But even if we weren't, Dylan is the type of guy who just has a way of making you respect him. This kind of, it probably doesn't make any sense, but hopefully it will. It almost like makes me feel good about myself in a way that a guy like him would appreciate my friendship. Do you know what I don't know if you know what I mean, but I'd love to say keep an eye out on Robots and Monsters. They're coming to a venue near you, but I think it's pretty obvious for that to happen. A lot of other things would need to sort of crystallize, mainly a superstar salary, a giant private jet that they can carry all of their wives and kids in. But, you know, in this age of downloading, you can get your fix. And now that you've gotten to know Dylan, I definitely would suggest trying to get to know the band's music.